So my name is Moaz Nasser, and the campaign name, it was the Green Kutba campaign.
Green Kutba. Okay, I was pretty close then earlier.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for getting on air with us today. You actually contacted me, and I love it when people do that. So the reason I'm pointing that out is just for any of our listeners out there, if you know anyone or if you yourself think that you might make a good guest for the show, hey, email us, because most of the time I end up putting people on the air, and I thank you very much for contacting us. So we're doing a bit of a split interview today. We wanted to talk about, first of all, just in general, I wanted to maybe start with just the idea of sort of, we do sort of religion and/environment pieces occasionally. It's been quite some time. Usually our guest on that topic is Stephen Sharper, who is a worldviews teacher and kind of is educationally a religion generalist. He studies religion in general, but his personal background is from a Christian perspective. So I wouldn't mind perhaps before we get into your actual campaign, if we could just talk it very generally, just about the idea of sort of the Muslim community, about Islam and the environment, about how those things are related, at least from your point of view.
Sure. Well, the tradition of Islam, it actually goes back a long time. When it comes to environmentalism, a lot of the core beliefs and teachings actually sort of have a religious thread that goes throughout history. Even if you look at, for example, the architecture and the design through the Islamic golden ages, for example, a lot of it incorporates aspects of religion, animals, nature, into the design. So if you look at the birth of a lot of the Abrahamic religions, including Christianity and Judaism, a lot of them were born out of the Sinai Peninsula, where conservation, for example, of water was sort of was widely practiced just because it was out of necessity. And within Islam, you do find similar teachings when it comes to water conservation, the treatment of animals, fair trade, justice in terms of the environment. And a lot of this has been incorporated within the faith as it's developed over the last 1,400 years. I would say probably in the last maybe 100 to 200 years, with the sort of the rise and fall of colonialism, a lot of these teachings have sort of been lost. And it's only been picked up within the last, I would say, maybe 50 years or so. There's been numerous authors and professors out there who've been sort of going back to the religious texts, not only in Islam, but other texts as well, just to see where does the role of environment play when it comes to practicing our faith? What role do we have as, you know, practicing believers when it comes to ensuring that the resources as well as, you know, nature in general is there for future generations?
And so would you say that it's at least in the way that you view it, is that intrinsically and explicitly instruction to protect the environment? Is this more of a sort of a general you should care for the earth in general sort of concept, or is there specific ideas about nurturing the environment? Can you get into some of the specifics at all?
Sure. So there are explicit verses within the Quran. The Quran is the main text within Islam, where that deals with water and waste. And there's also within what we call the prophetic tradition, which is known as the Sunnah. So it's called sort of like the collection of practices of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And, for example, when it comes to water conservation, he said not to waste water even if you're next to a flowing stream. So it's quite explicitly stated, you know, not to waste water. And then there's sort of indirect ways through the example of his lifestyle as well. For example, when he would be eating, he wouldn't, for example, waste any food afterwards. He would always make sure that nothing was left on his plate. So these are sort of implicit sort of examples that are there. When you go take a step back and you look at the faith from more of a holistic point of view, a lot of the teachings similar in Islam are similar to other faiths as well when it comes to respect for the environment and ensuring that the resources that we use today are there for future generations as well. So it's sort of implicitly as well as explicitly stated as well.
One of the connections, and this is definitely and decidedly more of a geopolitical issue than a religious issue, but when people think of Islamic countries in a geopolitical sense, a lot of time what they'll connect it with on an environment sense is oil. We have a lot of oil exploitation and export coming out of the Middle Eastern region, and a lot of these countries are either largely Islamic or have Islamic governments and that sort of thing. Can you comment at all about maybe where, you know, if there is this sort of like implicit care for the environment, and just where is there where that maybe comes into conflict with, you know, driving climate change, for instance, and oil exploitation and issues like that?
Sure. I mean, that's a question that's raised quite frequently, and I think you may have to separate, I guess, the beliefs of Islam as well as how it's practiced. So just because a country may be a Muslim country, quote unquote, they may not be, for example, practicing all the aspects of the religion, you know, as it's sort of clearly written. And oil is a good example of that. I do have to give credit, though, to a lot of the Middle countries right now because they are sort of shifting the tide when it comes to their dependency on oil. I know Saudi Arabia as well as Turkey, for example, have also adopted a lot of environmentally friendly measures as well, just because their situation in the world being, you know, near the equator, they do have access to a lot of solar energy, and a lot of them are, for example, are sort of reducing their dependency on oil, even though they might be exporting it, and becoming a more self-reliant. One example is the holy city of Mecca. They actually have, I believe it's a 10 or 15 year strategic plan to become totally solar dependent. So they won't be relying on any fossil fuels for, you know, just general electricity consumption. So they are leading the world in some areas, but oil is something that's also holding them back in some regards as well. But they do recognize that oil is a finite resource, and they do have to change their ways. It's sort of a means to the end, and not to say that the end justifies the means.
I mean, part of where I was going with that, was the idea of, you know, comparing, let's say, just at random, because you mentioned it, not because I know anything more or less about Saudi Arabia than any other country in that region, but so Saudi Arabia versus Alberta. Between those two examples, Saudi Arabia may have, like, massive oil reserves, and they're exporting it, and that's, you know, terrible for climate change, but if they're at least using some or much of that revenue to shore up alternatives and to do, like, investment in green energy and all that sort of stuff, if it's one or the other, if you're an oil exporting country and that's sort of where you get a lot of your resources from, if you're using the profit of that to build solar panels, I'm like, at least they're doing that. I mean, if all of Alberta's oil money was going into developing renewable energy such that we could stop mining oil, I'd be at least much more happy than I am right now, if not happy overall. So I think maybe there is something to learn from that. That maybe could we send some Alberta people over to Saudi Arabia and get them convince them that at least they should be investing in this for their own future, even if they have to export the oil for now.
Yeah, in a perfect world.
that directly on your shoulders. We'll get back to me on that one.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get too far away from your campaign as well. So let's get into the campaign now. You said this is the Green Kutba campaign, and just talk a little bit about how you're bringing together different religious groups and trying to encourage them to do a variety of actions to think about the environment for this Earth Day. So maybe you could just walk us through what some of those actions are.
Sure. So the Green Kutba campaign, just gave some background, was started last year, and the Kutba refers to the Friday sermon that's typically given at all mosques within Toronto and across the world. And the idea came out just to last year, for example. The Friday sermon coincided with Earth Day, and we thought, you know what, it might be a good opportunity to bring the environmental messaging into the mosque. And we developed a website, and we had resources, and it sort of ballooned from there. The intention is that it was going to be sort of a GTA startup, just to see what the response would have been. And I guess with the world of social media, it did go viral, so we had responses literally from across the world. And by the end of the two-week period last year, we had about 75 umbrella organizations as well as 75 individual congregations sign up to be part of this campaign. So this year we expanded upon it. We sort of freshened up the website, added more resources, made it a little bit more clear and easy to access. And once again, we had a great response from across the world in terms of mosques and congregations from right across Thailand, South Africa to Australia, and right across Europe signing up for the campaign. In a nutshell, the campaign sort of promotes environmentalism within Islam, and it had a very simple message this year. We sort of focused it around three C's. So the first one would be care for the environment. Care for the environment is one of them, consuming less as well as conserving more. And there's sample resources on the website that sort of allude to the examples that they could use within the Friday sermon when it comes to addressing these three aspects.
And as far as going forward, one of the concerns I've had, and again, this is a question that every single time I've had Stephen Sharper on the show is something I like to ask him as well. So fair to fair, I can't let you off the hook without asking you as well. Was that there's? I think it's more clear examples, and it may be simply a language issue. There could be 100 reasons, but one of the things that I see popping up on my YouTube playlist a lot is I'm a glutton for punishment, and I subscribe to a YouTube channel called Right Wing Watch, and they like to play clips of all sorts of nutty Christians in the U.S. about, like, Pat Robertson saying all sorts of ridiculous things about how environmentalists is actually a global you know, communist conspiracy and all sorts of silly, wacky nonsense. But there's, as much as one of the things I've sort of presented to him in the past was that as much as there is a number of Christian ministries and all sorts of religions, not just Christianity and including Muslim as well, or including Islam as well, of groups that are centered around the environment like yours and like a whole number of Christian-centered groups, but there's also sort of that other side. There's that other side of people who do the very inverse option. They use the religious texts or their religious practices to say, no, this has been, you know, ordained to us, and we can do with the world with whatever we like. Do you come across that at all? Or do you ever meet people within Islam who have that sort of opposing view and think that the sort of the world is here for us to take? Do you find that at all?
Well, quite personally, not from really the Muslim community. I mean, I've had sort of people voice their concerns on why should we be focusing on the environment when there's so many other issues plaguing the Islamic world right now, that the environment should take, for example, like a lower priority compared to, for example, world hunger and various other social causes that are out there. Speaking of, I guess, detractors, I mean, I do have some detractors from other faith groups who sort of see it as, for example, a quasi-liberal agenda, thing that it might be there. But I always had an open mind in terms of the articles that are posted on Khalifa, that they're from both sides of the political spectrum. So there are some in favor of the environment, some of them are in favor, for example, of the oil sands development. And I post various views just to stimulate discussion, and that's sort of the goal of Khalifa, is to get people talking. So you may not share the same views as them, but it's stimulating that discussion, and through this discussion, you know, inevitably everyone learns more about the other position.
Absolutely. So with a little bit of our sort of Earth Day celebration, just to wrap up here, we've got we've only got about 4 or 5 minutes left. Kevin, you can jump in here if you have any comments or questions. But just with a sort of celebration of Earth Day, just as a general message, we're also doubling our interview here as our sort of Earth Day wrap up as well. Do you have an Earth Day message to all the Green Majority listeners here today that you'd like to share as far as what they should be doing when they're thinking about Earth Day? I've been skeptical in the past that a day really does do anything. Do you think Earth Day is useful? And what would you recommend people use to think about or do during their Earth Day mindset?
Sure. I mean, I do believe Earth Day, it's valuable in its own right, just because it sets the stage for the rest of the year. We can't just, you know, be environmentally conscious for one day, but if you adopt certain measures from it and you sort of incorporate into your daily life, then essentially every day becomes Earth Day. Maybe one thing I would like to give to your listeners is that every little action does help. So, for example, if you're bringing a reusable water bottle or you're reusing shopping bags or whatever it may be, you know, the collective actions of the majority has an impact. You may not think your individual actions in the long term have a larger impact on saving the environment or conserving, you know, resources, but if we all do it and, you know, if you show and you share this message with your friends, your neighbors, and your colleagues, collectively it does make a difference in, you know, impacting the environment.
Kevin, we've got 3 minutes left, and we haven't heard from you in a little while. Do you have your own Kevin-style Dr. Doom Earth Day message for everybody today?
Well, except not especially. Sort of my typical rant is just do something.
Do something. I like that campaign. I can get behind that.
Do something. You know, write your MP. Write the PMO. I mean, I do this all the time, and I don't get much traction with it. But it's just make yourself be heard, because the green majority. The name of this show came from Jordan's idea that the majority of us are green, and we just don't know it. And I think the green majority is in danger of being the silent majority, and you know, Earth Day is great for raising awareness, but there's the other 364 days of the year where it's just important to make yourself heard.
Well, and I think Muaz was kind of insinuating this within the idea that you were just saying, Muaz, that like there's people who are, you know, pro environment, and then it's not that there's folks who are anti environment; it's that there's pro environment and then there's pro oil. And then there's pro-environment or there's pro-this. But you won't find anyone who's anti-environment. So what people are really, really saying is everybody's interested in the environment. Everybody thinks it's important. Some people just put other things ahead of it, is all.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, in that sense, and that's exactly what you're saying, Kevin, that's very much where the idea of the green majority comes from, is that I think that if people really understood the consequences of their opinions on things such as oil and stuff like that, we don't have to convince them to care about the environment. We just have to convince them that their concerns about oil or their concerns about jobs are, you know, there's a better way to look at it, or there's a better way of solving that problem. But there isn't anybody I've ever met who needs to be convinced that the environment is important. And I think as my final message for our Earth Day show here before we have to go is that, you know, and this is part of the reason why I was happy to have Muaz on today was that, you know, if your choice of the way that you want to interact with these issues is through a spiritual sense and you're a Christian or Muslim or a Buddhist or whatever you is, and that's what works for you, then go ahead. You know, join a group. You can go ahead and take part of the conversation on the Green Chutzpah. If you're so inclined, you can look up Stephen Sharper and find some Christian-oriented groups if that's your thing. If you want to write your MPs, go ahead and do it. That's your thing. You know, there's no specific action. There's no do this or you're not doing your job as an environmentalist. But I like what you said very much, Kevin. Do something. Figure out something that works for you and do it. And I think something that everybody can agree with. It's just, but you've got to spend a little bit of time thinking about what's something that you would enjoy doing,
right?
What is something that you would actually enjoy and be happy to be a part of? It shouldn't be a chore, right? For some people, writing their MP is going to be a huge chore. Okay, so don't do that. Do something else, but do something.
Right.
All right. So I think we can all agree on that. I want to thank you very much for joining the show today, Muaz. And we will, of course, have links to your website and to a bunch of references that you sent as well if people are interested in checking out that resource as well.